Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes and Dave Festchuk from The Star. We're going to talk LeBron a little bit later in the hour. He officially unveiled his I Promise Institute in Akron, Ohio. Very, very cool.
It's an impressive venture.
Very, very impressive. And what comes with it and who it's supposed to help. And someone brought this to my attention yesterday. Someone sent in a text or a tweet. Back in 2010 when he left for Miami, the decision and the way he went about that and the way he left Ohio and Cleveland and Akron and the reaction to it. Now the way he's leaving and going to L.A. and leaving a legacy in Cleveland, and he went to four straight NBA finals and he won them a title finally, and obviously the social work and what he's represented, it appears to be a very different reaction.
It's incredible.
In Cleveland and in Akron.
I mean, I was in Cleveland the night he came back as a member of the Heat for the first time. And they were burning jerseys outside, and they were throwing stuff onto the court inside. And the Heat absolutely waxed the Cavs that night. It was a brutal Cavs team, of course. He left it in ruins. But I'd never felt, Hayes, in all my years, I've been to sports on most of the continents, some pretty heated matches. I'd never felt visceral hate in a building, the way people hated LeBron that night, and the way there was hate spewed at him. And now, you look at it, it's amazing. Like, the way this guy comes back to Cleveland, you know, writes the, you know, coming back to my hometown piece in Sports Illustrated, delivers the championship that they hadn't won, you know, a major sports championship that they hadn't won since 1964, you know, kind of makes everything right. And even though he leaves, nobody's mad. Nobody's mad.
People are jealous. They prefer he stuck around. No one's, like, vitriolic about it.
In fact, the only people that seem mad, there's people defacing LeBron murals in L.A. for some reason.
Right, it's weird. People in L.A. are more upset almost in a way because of their insecurity when it comes to Kobe Bryant and Magic or whatever, like Lakers legends and the reaction to LeBron rolling into town. But we'll get to that a little bit later in the hour. You see Seth Rogen, it appears as if he's going to be the new voice of the TTC. And you are just outraged.
This has got me heated.
You've got hot takes for days on it. Why are you so against Seth Rogen?
I don't think it's a hot take. I think it's a public institution, okay? It's a Toronto institution. And Seth Rogen is not Torontonian. He's not from here. He, to my knowledge, he's never lived here. He has no connection to this place. He is a Canadian, one of 35 million. You know, and apparently he... Just because he tweets with Norm Kelly, one of our city councilors, that he'd happily do some free voiceovers for the TTC, they're taking him up on this offer.
He's doing it for free.
Allegedly. You know, and hey, I'll take that at face value. But my thing is, you know, you go to New York City, you're in a cab, you know, you hear the voice of Robert De Niro, who's a New York City guy, kind of synonymous with New York City cabs. You go places, you wanna have signature voices and signature moments. This guy's not one of us. He's not from here.
No, he's not. Now, there's a couple of things I would say on that. One, I don't know where the longtime voice of the TTC is from today. You know what I'm saying? Like, whoever the voice
of
the...
But if it's a generic voice, that's not the point.
I hear you, but it could be someone in Atlanta in a studio and no one's ever cared before. This is trying to take advantage of a celebrity, clearly. He's got a very distinctive voice. When you hear Seth Rogen, you know exactly who he is. My initial reaction was the same as yours. We have a lot of famous people from Toronto. Get Drake to do it. Get Mike Myers to do it. Or Jim Carrey to do it.
Jim Carrey.
Exactly. There's a lot of long-standing
Joe Bowen, if you want to go a little sports direction. Jack Armstrong. Matt Devlin.
There's a long list of them. Here's why I'm starting to embrace it.
No, you're not.
There's only one reason, and it's trolling Vancouver, because they did it first. And over time, if he's the long-standing voice of the TTC and whatever the name is of transit in Vancouver, there will be people that think Vancouver copied Toronto. And it will drive people insane out there. And I can't wait for that.
But the problem
is, the trolling
of
Vancouver is something I appreciate.
That's the other problem I have with this, though. That's not the order of events here. The order of events is He was doing Vancouver first, and now he's doing Toronto.
We know that.
We don't do that.
But eventually, that's going to get lost in the shuffle. That's my point. Eventually,
okay.
People are going to come to Toronto, ride the TTC, and then go to Vancouver and be like, wow, Vancouver copied Toronto. And it's going to drive people nuts out
there.
Second
of all, Vancouver doesn't even have a public transit system.
They don't?
They got a little SkyTrain.
So what the hell is he doing there? What's he voicing out there?
I think it's the buses and the SkyTrain. I mean, they don't even have a subway in that town. It's the traffic nightmare. You think traffic's bad here? Go there. I mean, I do not want to be associated with anything to do with Vancouver. As somebody who's lived in this town for 20 years, you were born here.
Yes.
You are a man of this city.
Right.
You should be outraged. We have so many. You talk about people making money voiceovers. Kiefer Sutherland. I mean, the guy is the voice of everything commercially. Now, maybe he wouldn't do it for free, but I'd rather pay somebody who's from here than get handouts from Vancouverites.
Well, it's a strong take. It's one that, again, my instincts suggest that I agree with you.
Thank you.
But there's just a trolling element of Vancouver that I think you're missing the point here.
But I think you're going to turn that out. Like, if you try and make that point, someone will Google it and go, ha-ha, Hayes, you're wrong.
Well, no one's going to take the time to do that. But it's more just because you know how the hatred that is a one-way street. People in Toronto don't hate Vancouver. People in Toronto don't hate anyone else in the country. They don't. It's always been a one-way street.
Exactly.
And in Vancouver, they hate Toronto. They loathe Toronto.
I see your point.
And the idea that now Rogan is doing it here, I feel like it's going to drive people nuts out there.
But my thing here is, like, here's the thing. You know, Seth Rogan said he'd do it for free. Like, I look at Seth Rogan, and I could be wrong in this. I'm not a movie expert, but he's not A-list. He's like down
he's pretty,
the list.
He's pretty close, man. He's had
A-list.
Some monsters.
Okay,
monsters.
Here's a guy, Keanu Reeves. You know how much money Keanu Reeves, North Toronto hockey alumni,
yes.
Keanu Reeves? You
North
think
Toronto
Tom Wilson?
High school
Tom
alum.
Wilson made a lot of money coming out of North Toronto yeah. hockey. Keanu Reeves has made about $300 million making films. I wouldn't mind that voice.
I think that would freak people out. He's too intense. Keanu Reeves, you know.
But didn't he do like the stoner voice too? Like he could do a lot of different
things. Well, he was
takes.
In Bill and Ted's.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what you're at, I don't remember who he was, Bill or Ted. I think it was
one
Ted.
Or the other.
Was he Ted? I don't remember.
Know.
No, maybe it was Bill. I don't know. Let's say he was Bill, for argument's sake. If he sounds like Bill, then okay. But then basically that's what Seth Rogen sounds like. But if he sounds like John Wick, I'm not interested in that.
But my thing is like for Seth Rogen. No wonder he'd do it for free. This is an incredible publicity opportunity. He should be paying to do it.
You think so?
To get his voice that omnipresent in a city this big? Like, that's free advertising for the career of Seth Rogen that you just can't buy.
Well, do you think he's gonna be saying, like, hey, Toronto, it's Seth Rogen, just so you know.
Well, I don't know.
I'm curious. Because I don't think he has to do anything for free. He doesn't. This guy's made a lot of money, and Toronto's obviously taking advantage of his distinctive voice. And I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know if he's going to announce every single possible station and route and all that, or if it will just be kind of a welcome.
Apparently, it's PSAs. It's like, don't. I like some of the PSAs, by the way. I'm not totally down on this. Like, he's like, don't clip your nails on the TTC or some such. And I'm all for that because people clipping their nails on the TTC, that's got to be something needs to be said, and I'm glad someone's saying it.
Well, there's a lot worse that happens on the TTC
well,
than clipping
there,
nails,
though.
But it would
that's
be on a
there.
Short list.
Pretty
I'll grant
gross.
You that.
Pretty gross.
There's a lot of gross stuff, though. And I don't think it's going to stop because of Seth Rogen.
No, that's my point.
I don't think anyone's walking onto the subway thinking, you know what I want to do is clip my nails and then hear Seth Rogen say, please don't do it. And then they're going to stop in their tracks.
This just strikes you as like some two-bit nonsense because Norm Kelly thinks it's a good idea. We're suddenly
well, since
doing
when
it?
Did Norm Kelly become the representative
yeah,
of the city?
Exactly.
I never understood that with his bogus Twitter account
we
that blatantly is not his.
No, exactly.
Of course, if anyone thinks Norm Kelly is personally sending out all these tweets,
oh, yeah.
I have a bridge to sell you. Because there isn't a chance it's him. It's never been him.
I got you.
You know, and I understand what he's represented, and he's come. I don't know enough about his politics. I don't follow City Hall on a daily basis in terms of what Norm Kelly is trying to represent. But I don't know. I mean, I guess there's a trolling element that I really appreciate
okay.
that I know Vancouver's not going to like.
I hadn't thought of that, and I buy that.
And
I buy
because
that.
You know they're going to hate it. You know people in Vancouver are absolutely going to turn on Seth Rogen because he should know better as a Vancouverite. You don't do anything for Toronto.
That's that to me.
They're
going to
turn on him in Vancouver.
I think his lack of exclusivity in this domain is going to bite him hard here. And I'm actually hoping for that. I want to see some backlash on Seth Rogen for this, because you can't just pimp out your services like this to any given city at any given moment and just step into any given recording booth and fire off some PSAs for, you know, this city, that city. What next? Like Winnipeg? Like, what are we doing?
I don't know. Well, then it's on someone that's famous in Toronto to step up, I guess. Like, if Rogan put himself out there and said, I'll do it, and is now actively trying to do it or whatever, and who knows? I don't think it's been confirmed that he actually is.
Oh, he's done it.
He's just, well, he took a picture with the head of the T.
But he was recording those PSAs as that picture was taken, allegedly.
Okay, so we'll see. You know, and we'll see. But then, you know, if Drake wants to do it, then step up and do it. I mean, but the thing is, people complain about Drake because people are like, some people like him, some people don't like him. Seth Rogen is a likable guy.
Well, that's in your opinion.
Well, you don't like Seth Rogen?
I don't have any feelings for the guy. Like, okay, to me, he's not a great actor. Like, I don't. Like, I'm sure he's okay. Like, I'm not a movie expert. I'm sure there'll be people out there going, have you seen him in this? Have you seen him in that? I know who he is. I've seen some of his films. He doesn't strike me as the pride of Canada.
No,
he's not, and he's definitely not the pride of Toronto because he's from Vancouver.
Right, very distinctive voice, though. I will say that.
Big deal. Well, you know what? You know, like, just because you're from Vancouver and Toronto might as well be in separate universes. Like, there's no connection. Like, I don't want Trevor Linden. You know, what are we doing next? Like, Trevor Linden, is he up for a job with the Leafs now?
I doubt it.
He's out with the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, you don't take Vancouver's second-rate, you know, cast-offs and just make them your own.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, we'll pick up on this later, because people are pouring in with their own suggestions and their takes on this.
Okay, good.
Seth Rogen is the voice of the TTC. Back into LeBron, though, and the I Promise Institute, or school in Akron, and the legacy he's leaving in the NBA. To chat about that, we head down to Cleveland now and catch up with ESPN Cleveland reporter Dave McMiniman. How you doing, Dave?
I'm well. Hey, fellas.
Give us your impression of what LeBron has accomplished here with this school in Akron.
It's unprecedented. I mean, now, it's not unprecedented in terms of what David Robinson did and Deion Sanders did and Jalen Rose did, but all those guys did it when they were retired. So the fact that LeBron is setting up this school while he's still playing and really doing it in a different fashion than these other schools that we've seen athletes be behind before, because one, it's not a charter school. It's not a public school. It's not a private school. It's in association with the Akron public schools, but it is kind of changing the policy that they do. In the past, Ohio schools, they would take, you know, quote unquote, at-risk children and students and have them in with the general population of all the other students. This is, you identify the students that have more needs, you take them out of the regular school environment, you put them in this intensive, full immersion program that LeBron has created, and we're talking about a 9-to-5 school day, we're talking about longer school seasons, you know, they had their first day of school yesterday, July 30th through May 17th is the school year, and then there's an additional summer session that you know, families can decide if they want to enroll their child in. And, you know, we're talking about you're fed at school. We're talking about that there are arts programs, and it's not just the basic core curriculum that a lot of inner city schools can provide because of the budget cuts. And, you know, we're talking also about a guy in LeBron James who, when he was in fourth grade, he missed 83 days of class. And now he turns this around as a 33-year-old man, and he's building a school that starts with just a third and a fourth grade class, because he views that period of a child's life as so crucial to making them be developed for the rest of their life. And just a very commendable feat thus far. And I was there for the school opening yesterday, and I'm there to cover it as a reporter, but certainly, you just admire the effort there, and the guy does great things on the court and great things off the court as well.
So, Dave, it was 8 years ago this summer that LeBron had the decision. He fled from Miami, and when he came back to Cleveland that next season, he was absolutely deluged with hate from his hometown crowd. 8 years on, I mean, I'm wondering, even though he's just coming off another decision where he has left town, How do you think, you know, the tone of the public toward LeBron has shifted?
I think it really shifted forever, Dave, back on June 19, 2016. He delivered the city a championship, something that a lot of people here had never experienced in their lives. And he brought that memory and brought, you know, grandsons and fathers and you know, sons and daughters together, and mothers, of course, too, and grandmothers. To experience something that they will share and relish as a family for the rest of their lives. And so no matter what happened this summer with the decision, he has so much goodwill built up here that it wouldn't be the same type of situation. You know, looking back, I've talked to LeBron several times about that first game he played back in Cleveland with a member of the Miami Heat. There was batteries thrown at him. There was coins thrown at him. There was, you know, a triple fold police force and security force there. It was an ugly, ugly atmosphere. And it won't be like that anymore. You know, Dan Gilbert's letter this time around was far more appreciative. I reported last week that when the Quicken Loans Arena reopens in the fall, after undergoing its $140 million renovation, LeBron James will be represented in the arena where they honor, you know, the legends and the history of the team. And so this time around, it's a recognition of we accomplished some pretty great things together in those 11 years. I'll always be connected to Northeast Ohio and to Akron and to Cleveland. I may not play basketball here anymore, but there's no reason for both sides to appreciate one another.
With Dave McMiniman of ESPN Cleveland talking about the legacy of LeBron in Cleveland and throughout the NBA and what he's done recently with that new school in Akron, his hometown. And he's been doing some interviews recently. He didn't completely close the door on ever returning to the Cavs, but it seems very unlikely to me. I think the fact that he signed a four-year deal in L.A. Has opened the door to some speculation about where his head's at, you know, how committed he is, how good the Lakers are actually going to be. I mean, you've obviously covered him and you've known him for quite some time. Do you get the impression like there's a chance while he's still playing that he won't have that same edge that he always has, that he won't be obsessed with winning titles? Is it possible for LeBron to be playing but not be obsessed with being the best player on the planet?
I mean, I don't want to sell the guy short because he put so much into his basketball life, but when he said during the 2017 playoffs, actually, I think the quote came when the Cavs were in Toronto, actually, that I have nothing left to prove as a basketball player. Basically saying, I'm taking the sword out of the hands of all my critics. What can you say about me now? You know, at that point, obviously, he had four MVPs. He had three championships. Since then, he's tacked on two runs to the finals. He tacked on, which some people believe, the most dominant individual playoff run that we've seen in the modern era during this 2018 playoffs, with dragging a Cavs team that had no business really to the NBA Finals. So I do think that there's no kind of burning need for him to win another championship. If he ends with what he's won, he'll be, you know, okay and satisfied. But at the same time, it's not like he's going to go out there and start skipping practices or start not giving full effort, or, you know, so he can go to, you know, Hollywood meetings. The guy's still going to hold himself to a high standard. And, you know, I was in the room when Rachel Nichols interviewed him yesterday at the school, and she kind of suggested that, hey, this might be one of the last years of your prime, and you're kind of wasting it on a rebuilding team. And he took exception on both those points. He said, I don't think we're rebuilding. I think we have a team that can make a lot of noise in the West. And beyond that, he said, I don't see myself slowing down whatsoever. I mean, could that be hubris? Of course. But are we going to bet against the guy who just played all 82 games last year and in my opinion, should have been the MVP? I wouldn't do that. So I think he still has a lot of great basketball ahead of him as well.
Totally. Dave, I totally agree with you on not betting against LeBron, but how much do you take that we're not a rebuilding team with a grain of salt when you look at the depth chart? I mean, you got center, you got JaVale McGee, you got Brandon Ingram, you got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you got Lonzo Ball, you got Rajon Rondo and Lance Stevenson, some wild card guys who obviously are veterans with game. But, you know, how does that compare to what he's had in the past? And do you think he can lift it as good as he is? Can he do that kind of heavy lifting?
I think for this team to be the kind of team that he's talking about them being, there has to be a leap year for Brandon Ingram, for Lonzo in particular. I view Hart and Kuzma more as role players, you know, maybe high-level role players, but Lonzo and Ingram, the guys with star potential. So, yeah, of course, there's got to be a leap year there. There's got to be a buy-in from all those veterans that, you know, as LeBron basically described them, I'm not worried about them because they're basketball junkies, and if you're that, I can work with you. But, you know, there still has to be buy-in from those guys. And there's going to have to be, you know, a superb coaching job by Luke Walton to be able to mix all these parts together relatively quickly. So there's no, again, there's no formula here where you say, you know, you plug all these players into, you know, one of these Kevin Pelton statistical programs, you think they're going to end up with 55 wins. At the same time, you know, LeBron's the guy who, he's not going to let this thing just go off the rails. I can't imagine that happening. So just by virtue of his presence, plus, you know, I do think there's reason to have faith in some of the young talent for the Lakers, that they will be a very competitive team. And, you know, once they can figure out what they want to do on a night-in, night-out basis, I imagine they'll be a better team in the second half of the season than they are in the first half.
Thank you, Dave. Really appreciate you doing this.
Okay, guys.
Dave McMenamin of ESPN Cleveland. The legacy of LeBron, obviously very different today than it was 10 years ago after the decision and taking his talents to South Beach. Everything was handled differently. Like, even how it was kind of leaning towards the Lakers, and he didn't waste time. July 1st, I'm going to the Lakers. He didn't wait until July 10th, you know, and it came out via reports. It wasn't written. It wasn't televised. It was LeBron's. No,
it was his Twitter account.
Yeah, I'm going to the Lakers.
His Twitter account.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is it. No, big production. Let's go.
But the interesting thing is there was a lot of people in the league who were saying he's not going to the Lakers. He's going to L.A. In other words, it's not about the team. It's about the market.
Which I believe.
Yeah.
I fully believe.
Yeah, because I don't buy this stuff about, like, his faith in this team cannot be as great as he made it sound with Rachel Nichols on The Jump the other night, where he's talking about, we're not rebuilding. They're rebuilding.
They are rebuilding. I would have more faith if this team was in the Eastern Conference.
Yes.
I mean, that's something important to point out. He was on an awful Cleveland team for the most part last year. They're going to be brutal this year.
Yeah, but at least they had another all-star in Kevin Love.
Technically, but he was banged up
at times
and very up and down type of player.
But he's a stud player at his best, and he was okay at times.
Right, but I think Kuzma, if he takes more steps, could potentially be that. I mean, Lonzo Ball, who knows? Rondo, who knows? Brandon Ingram, he's got talent, he's got size, he's got length.
Right.
I mean, he's got some pieces there. They haven't developed properly, but I think it's because he's in the West where you have to lose faith. I mean, this team isn't close to Golden State. I don't think they're close to Houston. I think they're kind of in that middle range, maybe with Oklahoma City, maybe with Utah, you know, but more than likely a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seed than a top 3 or 4 seed.
I mean, you look at it. I mean, it's not easy to make the playoffs in the West. The 47 wins made the playoffs in the West. 46 wins didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, this doesn't scream out, you know, this doesn't scream out 50-win team.
No, I think the fact that he signed a 4-year deal is what stood out more than anything to me. This is a guy who's always signed 1-year deals with options to keep ownership on tilt.
Yeah.
To make sure that the team never lost sight of the end goal, and that was to win a title and to make sure that he was happy. He just said to Magic and the Lakers, I'm here, man. Do what you got to do. Now, he's involved, but 4 years?
And again, not about the Lakers, about L.A., and about apparently the 4-year deal. A lot of people put two and two together and said, well, that makes 4. And also, what happens in 4 years? His son's high school career. He's going into grade 9. It'll be 4 years when he's in high school. He didn't want to disrupt LeBron James Jr.'s high school career with another move.
Right.
So that's why he took the 4-year deal, a lot of people believe. Had nothing to do with his NBA career. Had more to do with his son's basketball career, which apparently is maybe equal in his mind in terms of his concern at this point in his life.
Right.
Which is an interesting thing.
It is, and he has the right to do it. But
for
if
sure.
You're a Laker fan, you got to ask yourself, which LeBron are you getting?
Right.
There's a good chance we're going to see a different LeBron. And that doesn't mean he won't be great. He could put up great numbers in his sleep. Like, he's still going to be a great player. But will he be obsessed with greatness?
Right.
That's where, you know, guys change, man. That's when you just get one thing in your mind that was not there before, that can throw you off tilt a little bit. Look at Tiger Woods.
Well, here's the one thing in his mind that can throw you off. Nobody's beaten Golden State, okay?
Well,
nobody's
valid.
Beaten Golden State. In other words, it's a futile pursuit. I mean, he's tried, and he got him once with Kyrie on his side, but he ain't beaten him with this collection of misfits. And even if Paul George ends up coming there next year or whatever, I mean, who knows? I mean, if they can get somebody else to come there, maybe it changes. And I guess if Durant gets sad, as he seems to always do, and leaves Golden State, I guess that's a wild card too.
Well, but people are opening that door, but I don't see him going to the Lakers.
Like, I don't see him going to the Lakers, but if he leaves Golden State...
Exactly. Then things change.
It breaks things up
a little
bit.
Klay Thompson's got to get paid, right. And maybe he's got to go. And yes, of course, the dynasty... I don't think Golden State's going to win another four or five titles in a row. Like, no, that,
they're probably
that's not going to happen.
They're winning 2019. I think we can safely say that, you know, outside of catastrophic injuries striking the entire starting lineup.
Yes.
I think we're heading that direction.
Safest money in pro sports is them winning another title. William Nylander was speaking yesterday about his contractual situation. We'll get into that. Back into the baseball deadline. The Jays made a couple of minor deals today, a couple of bullpen arms. And we've got some audio of the Seth Rogen TTC PSAs.
Well, now.
We got to hear a couple of those. Dave Feschuk's in here from the Star. Brian Hayes, Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, Richard Justice will join us to kick off the 6 p.m. hour of MLB.com, Baseball Insider. The MLB trade deadline passed about an hour and a half ago. Aaron Loop to the Phillies, John Axford to the Dodgers for a couple of minor league arms. That's what they've accumulated. We had Ross Atkins on, I think it was late last week, and I brought that to his attention, that after the Hap deal, you bring in more bats, you bring in more infielders. We all know about Guerrero Jr., we know about Bichette. Clearly, they need to address their pitching staff.
Oh, you think?
And he said it. He's like, no, there's no question. Like, going forward, Ty goes to the arms, and they need to address that. And Estrada did not get flipped, didn't look very good last night. He doesn't look very good for a while now. But he's more than likely not going to be in the cards going forward. If Hap doesn't return, there's two guys out of your rotation. Garcia's not an option going forward.
No.
You're looking at Stroman and Sanchez as guys who are going to break camp in the rotation next year, and there's question marks about them.
Huge question marks.
So you got to fill out a rotation here going forward.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, to say nothing of the bullpen, now that you don't have a closer and you've just traded a couple of guys who have been kind of locks in your bullpen this year.
Right, because, you know, as we talked about yesterday, like, it's happening fast here. Like, Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star, my great colleague, pointed out that he's of the belief that Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is going to be in Buffalo for August, and then come September, guess where he's going to be? He's going to be in Toronto. And then come next spring, guess where he's going to be? In Toronto. He's going to be a big leaguer from the get-go. So what's that mean? That means if you got nothing around him from the get-go, if you're this bad, you know, you've taken the best prospect you've had maybe in the history of the franchise, and you've placed him in a losing environment to begin his career. Is that what you want here? Is that what you're going for here?
I don't see how they avoid that, though. I really don't. I mean, the reality is they are nowhere close to the Yankees or the Red Sox. Nowhere close. So the best case scenario is they're third in their division next year. Best case scenario.
Which is why revisionist history, and it's not revisionist because we were saying it at the time, they needed to trade Josh Donaldson a long time ago.
Absolutely.
This is when the miscalculation really strikes you, when, you know, you hear Ross Atkins say there was interest in Josh Donaldson at the deadline today. Oh, was there? There was a lot of interest in a 32-year-old guy who hasn't been healthy all season, who's rehabbing in Florida, can't even run yet, can't run the bases yet. There's a lot of interest in that, I'm sure, Ross. And it would have been pennies on the dollar.
That's what it would have been. There would have been teams with money that would have said, you know what, we'll take on the rest of the contract.
Sure.
We're not going to give you anything, though.
Right.
And we're willing to gamble. And if it never pays off, so be it. It's only money. But they couldn't do that because they would never be able to save face. If they just got rid of him for nothing, people would be like, it would accentuate how awful this has played out.
As Griff talked about, the absolute misread of the market that this management team has had. And there's no better example in the Donaldson situation, because they didn't trade him. They explained to us, Mark Shapiro, in one of his rare appearances in the media, talked about how maybe the best baseball move would have been to trade him, but we're not making baseball moves here. We're trying to, you know, placate our fans.
Yeah,
we're trying
to
satisfy
the fans.
We owe it to this fan base that shows up 35,000 strong. Well, guess what? They don't show up 35,000 strong anymore. What a shock, because Josh Donaldson isn't playing, and you didn't get anything for him. And that's one of the biggest miscalculations I can remember, you know, in very recent history in Toronto sports. Like, you had a MVP-caliber asset, and you're going to get nothing for him.
And today explains how horribly it's been handled and how everything just broke the wrong way for them, because today was an absolute dud. Really, the whole week has been a dud. You know, for what they got for Hap, it felt like they should have gotten more.
Yeah.
Depending on how you value Hap. Now, Osuna, because of circumstances that are out of their hands, clearly, because of what he's done in his personal life, completely devalued an asset that was very significant for them coming into the season. And now you've traded a couple of guys out of the bullpen that realistically are probably not going to get you much in return. That's it. For a team that is about to finish back-to-back years with sub-80 wins and nowhere close to a playoff pursuit. And the reality is, everyone's excited for Vladdy Guerrero Jr. to come up. When he comes up, there will be an immediate buzz, and people will go see him, and people will watch him, and people will talk about him. That will fade if the team loses. What it was proven in 2015 and 2016 is you got to win for people to truly generate that buzz and come storming into the Rogers Center.
Yeah.
And watch the games and listen to the games and write about the games and talk about the games, because we've had stars. You know, Clemens won back-to-back Cy Youngs. Delgado was a stud. There have been a lot of them over the years. It didn't translate to massive, massive attention being directed towards the team because the team didn't win.
And that's what you worry about.
And Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is not going to be any different.
That's what I'm saying. That's what you worry about here. You know, I think you could be going down a road here where the Vladdy Guerrero Jr. era is a dismal era, because the Yankees and Red Sox aren't getting any worse anytime soon. They're stacked with young guys.
And young.
That's the thing.
Youthful.
They're youthful, and they're rich, and they're willing to make investments that the Blue Jays repeatedly have proven they will not make in players and development and in building a system. And it seems to me that, you know, the whole model that the Shapiro-Atkins management team is leaning on here is let's go cheap, let's go efficient, let's try and build it up through the farm system, a la Cleveland. In other words, you got a Cleveland model attempting to compete against the beasts of the AL East.
Well, and that's the difference,
good
right?
Good luck with that.
In the AL Central, you just don't, like Kansas City, they don't spend a lot of money, right? Like Detroit used to when Illich was still alive.
Right.
But I don't think they're doing that anymore, you know, and they're stuck with Cabrera and a couple of other big contracts.
Exactly.
And, you know, you look at the White Sox, they're not going to spend at the same level that the Cubs are in that city.
Not even close.
You know, so it is a lot easier to accomplish that in the Central compared to what you're doing in the AL East because of these two teams, clearly. So we'll get back into the trade deadline in about a half an hour. There were rumors that Bryce Harper was potentially available. It did not end up getting flipped. We'll catch up with Richard Justice of MLB.com. So William Nylander was in town and speaking with the media, and Nylander's not a guy who really says anything.
No.
You know, none of the three kids really say anything.
Well, Mitch Marner more than the other two.
Mitch will. He will speak openly about what it's like to be a Leaf, how he likes it
here.
He's not going to open up about, you know, contractual stuff.
Or how much he hated being on the fourth line last year.
Exactly. Like, he's, you know, he knows his limits in terms of where he's willing to go. And they'll talk openly about different stuff. Like, we interviewed Matthews and Marner on Friday. And if you get into more lighthearted stuff and fun stuff, they're still kids. You realize that they're still kids when you're talking with them. But they're willing to give you something and embrace that kind of conversation. Be somewhat outspoken. Nylander shuts everything down.
He won't go anywhere.
William Nylander will not talk about anything.
Yeah, he won't talk serious. He won't talk fun. He won't talk video games. He won't talk what he does in his spare time.
Nothing.
Willie's a closed book.
Yes, he's mastered. I'm not giving you anything, which is his right. He doesn't have to say anything. And yesterday he was asked about his contractual stuff, and all three of them have come up with basically the same explanations in terms of their nerves, in terms of their reaction. Out of my hands, my agent's talking about it with Kyle. Kyle has said that he wants to be very patient with this. I'm cool, calm, and collected. We'll figure out where it's going to go. I don't believe that for a second.
No.
I don't believe for a second William Nylander, Mitch Marner, or Austin Matthews are not actually wondering day in, day out what's going on with their contract.
Well, the one thing people always talk about it, when it comes to the Nylander family, and of course, William Nylander is the son of Michael Nylander, a longtime NHLer, And if William is like anything like his father, and a lot of people say they're a little bit alike, at least, and certainly they're related by blood. Michael Nylander had this reputation for being a micromanager of his agent. Like, he fired multiple agents. I think you walk through the ACC halls on any given night, on a game night, you will find an agent that Michael Nylander fired, and they'll be happy to tell you about the time Michael Nylander called him up and said, you're fired. So it's hard for me to believe that the Nylander family in general is not more involved in this than maybe Willie is letting on.
Yes, and William Nylander, of the three kids, is well-schooled in the business aspect of the National
Hockey
League.
That's what I mean.
Because of his dad, right?
He lived it.
Absolutely. Like, I'm sure Nylander, everything I've heard is these three kids, they love playing with the Leafs, they love playing for the Leafs, they love playing here, first-class organization, blah, blah, blah. And more importantly, they love that this team has a real chance to be very good for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure William Nylander would love to be a Leaf forever. But I don't believe he actually expects to be a Leaf forever because of his dad's career. His dad jumped around everywhere.
I was going to say, that's the other aspect of Michael Nylander's career.
Right, which I think is actually a positive. Like, I think it would be better for every player to come into the league and realize the reality is you are not going to stay on one team your whole career. And it's not going to be smooth sailing for 20 years. And you're not all going to play 1,500 games and go to the Hall of Fame and walk away with $100 million cash in your bank. Nylander knows the inner workings of the hockey world. He knows it. And I'm not saying this again as if he doesn't want to be here. I think he wants to be here. I'm sure he will be here for a long time. I hope he's here for a long time. He's a great young player. And it's a sign of this new era with the Leafs. Drafted, signed, developed, played, and made an impact.
Yes.
But I think of the three of them, he would be the least surprised if there was friction between his agent and the team. He would be the least surprised if he had to move on somewhere down the road. I'm sure he would almost embrace it and realize this is the way it goes in the National Hockey League. Yeah. I did it as a kid. I moved from city to city to city for 15 years.
His dad played 900 games for seven different teams
exactly.
In the NHL, not to mention a handful in Europe.
Yes. I mean, and Nylander was a stud. Now, yeah. He was somewhat inconsistent, depending on his reputation around the league, but was a guy with real talent that could put up numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And he jumped around.
420-plus goal seasons Michael Nylander had. Now, there were always... It was always he wasn't giving you enough for his talent level. And maybe there's been moments where that's been the story of William Nylander. Now, he's two straight 61-point seasons. It's hard to say he hasn't given you enough. I mean, those were elite numbers for a guy of that age. And he's, if you look at guys with comparable stats, they've all made, in the range of, deals that give you $6 to $7 million a year, maybe eight, depending on if you overpay like the Oilers overpaid for Leon Draisaitl. So, he's going to get paid well. Question is, will he get paid here long term?
Yes, exactly. And that's only Dubas really knows. Dubas, Shanahan and company know exactly how they plan on approaching this. Nylander's got to sign before he can play.
Of course.
So that is going to happen at some point. Whether it's today, tomorrow, next week, next month, leads into training camp, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. As for Matthews and Marner, obviously very different because they still have a year left on their deal. But I think it would be a home run for the organization to get all three locked in this summer.
Yeah.
That's the ideal option. I think it always has been. Now, you got to win the negotiations if you're the team. And if you're a fan, as much as you love the players, you're hoping that the teams technically win the deal. You don't want them to cut them off at the knees and completely ruin the reputation or the relationship between the two parties, but you're banking on them winning at least one or two of these contracts in terms of the overall number,
yeah.
So that they can spread the wealth a little.
Yeah, you don't want a Draisaitl situation where you overpay a guy who hasn't proven anything and then he underperforms.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the nightmare scenario, especially since you got three of them. So you're right. It's a big moment in franchise history for Kyle Dubas. And it's hard to know what's going on. The way, if you're reading sort of the code language that Nylander talked about, he said, hey, he did put it, he said one thing that was of value to me, and it backs up what you hear, is that Kyle's taking his time.
He said that to me multiple times on this show, that if there's one thing he learned from Lou Lamoriello, it was take your time. If you have it, use all of it, or the majority of it. Be patient. And he has said that, and I think that was more of a warning to the fan base, hey, don't freak out if this doesn't happen right away. Like, McDavid signed his extension the second he could. Yeah. July 1st, a year before his deal was up,
100%.
He signed it. Matthews could have signed a month ago.
Yeah.
He hasn't.
Yeah.
Marner could have signed a month ago. Nylander, the same thing. They haven't. I think that was Dubas telling the players, but also telling the fans, like, don't freak out. Everything's going to work out. He's been very confident that he's going to make this happen, but he is being patient. And there's got to be a reason behind that. You know, what it is, I don't know. Is he trying to take as much time as he can to make sure that the players wilt a little bit, or they feel some pressure to take a lower number? I guess we'll find out.
It's the old Lou Lamoriello line, right? If you got time, take it. Like, there's no deadline here.
No, there isn't.
Well, only with Nylander, it's the first game of the season is really. I mean, I guess you want him signed before camp.
You want him before camp. You don't want a holdout scenario here.
You don't want a holdout scenario. But on the other hand, you know, we've seen teams do it. I mean, because it exerts pressure on the player.
Yeah, and it happens a lot with RFAs. It happened with Pasternak in Boston. It happened with Goudreau in Calgary, where it got real close to camp, if not into camp. And eventually they brokered the deal.
Because if you're the team, you know, one of your only leverages is getting the guy a little bit jittery. You know, getting the guy phoning his agent saying what's going on every 3 hours or every 2 hours or every six, you know, every 30 minutes. That's your only leverage here with guys at this level, right? You know?
Well, and this is the heavy lifting for Dubas. Like, convincing Tavares to come here was tough, but getting that deal done was not that difficult.
No.
You knew it was going to be a 7-year deal, no move, no trade, around a certain number, and the whole fan base was going to fawn over it.
Yes.
Everyone was going to be ecstatic and cool with it and load up on the emotional aspect of it, that he's a Toronto kid coming home and he's John Tavares, a superstar, blah, blah, blah. The actual contract was not that difficult to work out.
No.
This is the heavy lifting. This is the first time Kyle Dubas is truly on the clock in terms of how he's going to manipulate all this. And Shanahan's going to factor in, too. And the guys that he's hired in terms of assistant GMs, Lawrence Gilman, Brandon Pridham, they're going to factor in terms of crunching the numbers and trying to work out deals that make sense. But this is where he's truly going to start making a name for himself. And the Tavares stuff he gets some credit for, there's no question. I mean, Dubas was in the room, and by all accounts, he factored in large in terms of the sales pitch. But that may have happened anyway if Lou was here or if Hunter was here. Who knows? With Shanahan and Babcock in the room and the connection to the city that Tavares clearly had before those pitches even took place.
Yeah.
This is where it really gets going.
See, to me, this is not that difficult a process, though. What you do here, the leverage you have is you go to the guys, each guy, and you say, if you really want to play for this team, you want to be the king of this town, which is a town like any other, unlike any other. This is the center of the hockey universe, and if you want to rule it, here's what you're going to have to take. Because you just go to him with a spreadsheet and say, if you make this and you make this and you make this, we can make it work. If you don't, we can't. So, fellas, you decide. Do you want to be in or do you want to be out? Do you want to play with Johnny T or do you not? Do you want to be in the Stanley Cup parade going down Yonge Street and Bay Street or do you not? Because you've got the option here, boys, and it's going to cost you a couple million here and there.
Here's the problem with that, though. There's an interrogation element to all of this.
Well, maybe you don't say it like I just said.
But that's what I'm saying. You don't put all of the witnesses in the same room or all of the potentially convicted in the same room because you know they're not saying the same thing to Matthews that they're saying to Marner. Oh, the same thing to Marner that they're saying to Nylander. Because you can't give that sales pitch to all three of them because then they're all going to look at each other and say, okay, well, I'll take the exact same amount. And you know that's not going to happen.
They're not equals. They're not equals in this conversation. I understand that. But it's a variation on that pitch. There is a certain... It's what Shanahan said since he got here, which is, I don't want guys that don't appreciate what it means to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. I want guys who embrace being a Toronto Maple Leaf. And you know what? That embrace might come at a cost. And by the way, you will make up that cost by talking to Wendell Clark about what it's like to be Wendell Clark Incorporated as an ex-captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Even though you didn't win a Stanley Cup in Toronto, you can go to an appearance on any given Sunday.
Oh, these guys
and
are going to make
X
money
amount
forever.
Of money. So that's what I'm saying. The money's got to be put in perspective for these guys.
There's no disputing that.
Yeah.
The only potential counter to it is, okay, is that what you said to Tavares? Because I don't think he took 9.5 so that we could all get paid, too. $11 million is $11 million.
$11 million is $11 million, but he could have taken more by all accounts.
Reportedly, he had better offers on the table.
He could have gone to non-tax state if the money was everything.
That might be the counter.
Yeah.
But still, $11 million is $11 million.
Look, I mean, he's not starving. We understand that.
Yeah. We'll pick up on this in the next hour. We will play some of the Seth Rogen TTC PSAs as well. There's a lot of reaction coming in. People sliding into my DMs on Instagram. One guy just going crazy on Instagram.
For or against?
Well, against your take about Rogen. And okay. I guess my take to a certain extent.
Was it Seth?
Yeah, it might be his burner account. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, we'll get back into the MLB trade deadline. Some interesting quotes coming out of Dan Duquette, who runs baseball operations down in Baltimore. They unloaded a lot of pieces over the past couple of weeks, and they're one of the worst teams you're ever going to see in your life. But interesting quote, and maybe a quote that some people in Toronto want to hear or wanted to hear. We'll get to that in the next hour. And there's some potential controversy in the NFL in terms of some new rules that players are already starting to concern themselves with. We'll catch up with Brian Baldinger, get his take on some news and notes throughout NFL training camps as we get closer to real games. This weekend's the Hall of Fame game. Once that starts, you've got football every single weekend all the way through the middle of February. So we'll catch up with Brian Baldinger as well. And the Seth Rogen TTC PSAs, we'll let you hear a couple. That's coming up in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.